a subcommittee to receive testimony. And first person, Betsy Earls, please. Oh, Senator Castillo said she'd be right back.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries. And we very much appreciate all the time and energy that all of you have put into House Bill 1582 up to this point, and I know there will be a lot more to go. But as you know, an increase in transportation funding was one of the AOI's highest priorities this session, and we really, really appreciate this committee's consideration of the bill. AOI started out the legislative session this year with three goals to be satisfied by a gas tax bill. The first was that it contributes to the free flow of freight and people, thus saving money and time. We wanted it to provide sufficient funding to maintain roads and bridges in usable condition, and we wanted any bill or package to emphasize value for dollars spent, ensuring efficiency to the greatest extent possible. House Bill 2082 in its current form meets those goals. The bill provides for bonding, as you know, in the amount of approximately $600 million for new state projects. This bonding package and these projects are extremely important to AOI and the business community because they will increase system capacity. This, in turn, supports growth and improves safety, which is also very important to us. The bill also, by increasing the gas tax and registration fees, provides funding to help state and local governments with maintenance and preservation goals. As to value for dollars spent, I think you all know that this session several bills have passed dealing with ODOT accountability and efficiency, which we have worked on and others in this room have worked very hard on. It's our hope that those bills will help ODOT to improve not only their actual accountability, but their public perception of accountability, which I think is something that has been maybe lagging behind reality. ODOT has worked very hard in the last several years to improve their accountability and efficiency, and it's our hope that the legislation passed this session will shed a little bit more light on that. The last point I wanted to make relates to truck taxes and the truck tax portion of House Bill 2082. As you know, the bill changes the weight mile system that we've had for a long time in Oregon to a diesel fuel system. In order for this change to be acceptable to AOI, we needed to see that any change in the system would be revenue neutral and cost responsible between cars and trucks. And to that end, you may know, many of us in this room have spent a lot of time starting last summer, late last summer and fall, working on revenue neutrality and the assumptions that would go into any decision about revenue neutrality. We spent a very long time working through the beginning of this session on that issue. We came to what I believe is a satisfactory resolution, which is that the bill is revenue neutral as it's written right now. After we were done, more work was done on this fiscal impact or revenue neutrality by, I think, legislative, fiscal, and the trucking community to reach even a more satisfactory resolution. So to that end, it's our position that the bill meets our most basic requirement of a system change, and therefore we also support that change.
Mm-hmm. Betsy, thank you very much. I must say that I'm not really comfortable with the change from weight mile to diesel tax. That may be because I don't know enough about it. I'm just new on the committee, and I know Senator Byers has been working on. Could you reassure me that the cost responsibility is going to be maintained, Senator?
Oh, sure, Senator. No, actually, Senator, from the work that I've done, I believe that if we adopt all the agreements, which I'm not sure in the bill yet, but frankly, I just haven't had the chance to go through the new CE and gross version that well, but I think that there will be good protection if we were to pass this between trucks as a class and cars. I think there's some questions about whether you can maintain a fair balance among truck classes. That was a concern that I had, and frankly still do have, but frankly I've sort of been pulled away from it and said if the industry as a whole wants to deal with it, that's their issue. But I guess it's one, if I may, Mr. Chair, I just asked Betsy, I mean, one of the things that I think will happen out of this is you will see a substantial increase in fees for all trucks. I believe over time you will probably see some shifting towards more of the in-state trucks that work in-state alone and the smaller trucks, they will end up paying probably a higher percentage than they have in the past. Just over time. I don't think they will initially, but I think they will over time. And I guess the other thing is I believe that just my observations is that Politex works well in this building, and the people who have professional representation in the building have done pretty well in the bill. I'm not so sure that that's true of the small independents who don't know what's here. And a question that has been raised to me by people is whether this will cause a significant barrier to entry by small, you know, whether it's construction companies or roadwork companies, those kinds of things. And Betsy, I guess AOI is the only one out there who represents this group, substantial, and have you thought that one through? And
Chair, Senator Byer, I'm sorry. We have. At the beginning of the session, we had one of the same concerns that you just expressed, which was that the trucking industry that was represented in this building was doing fine, and the trucking industry that was kind of the mom-and-pop operation didn't even know. And we were concerned that maybe we weren't getting the full story. So what we decided to do was put out a survey to all trucking companies in Oregon with three or more trucks to make sure, number one, that they knew by way of putting out a survey telling them what was happening, and number two, to find out what would happen to their individual companies. We haven't talked about that survey for a long time because it's a little bit confusing to explain in a large group. I'd be happy to come to your office or have Smart Nelson, who understands it better, come, you know, and talk to you about the results of it. But I will tell you that generally what we found is an extreme lack of concern among small trucking companies. And I wouldn't say we did the smallest. Surveys like that are never cheap. And even with three or more trucking companies, there were several thousand that we mailed to. So the smallest of the smallest group we didn't reach. But I think that we did get quite a few. The majority had three or four trucks. And there was quite a bit less concern than I had expected to see. But if you'd like to go over the actual results, we'd be happy to.
No, I'm just, from my perspective, I mean, you represent that group. You believe they're well taken care of?
I believe that they're in a position to be well taken care of. And I'm not, I can't speak to the one to threes because we just didn't have resources to cover that group. But
you've looked at technically the split. And without talking to them, you feel okay about it?
I do. It's my understanding that things are going to work out fine between classes of trucks.
So we can adopt this and go out and back to our district and say, AOI said this is a great bill for small companies.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Betsy. Senator Castillo, I know you've been working on this long and hard, and we're just talking about the cost responsibility aspect of the diesel fuel tax. Do you have any comment that you'd like to make about where you think we are with that and get it on the record?
Well, I have some real concerns about what happens with the cost responsibility between the trucks, and not so much between the trucks and the cars as this proposal is shaped up. And I have concerns about the incentives that are in place with our current system and whether some of those incentives are going to go away if we make the change. Like, I know right now under our current system, there are incentives for trucks to haul lower weights and have more axles and work towards having fewer of the heavier loads. And I'm wondering, if we change this, is that incentive going to go away under this new formula? It seems to me that it does go away, and I don't know that that's a good thing for our roads in the long term.
Mr. Chair, Senator Castillo, I am probably not in the best position to speak to that because I have been fairly distant the last couple months in the discussion of cost responsibility between parking classes. I think you were in here when I mentioned that we spend an awful lot of time on revenue neutrality of the truck group as a whole, and that's what I'm most familiar with, but I think I can't speak to that.
Mr. Chair? Mm-hmm. On the revenue neutrality issue, I guess I'm wondering how you reduce the tax for some trucks and give exemptions to certain classes of trucks and still remain revenue neutral. I'm just kind of wondering how that's going to work. My understanding, there are a number of trucks that will be exempted.
Senator, Betsy, is there someone in the audience that can respond to that more clearly?
I think there is, and I also know that you're taking testimony on the truck tax this afternoon.
Oh, okay.
Okay. We'll put it on.
Sure.
Any other questions for Betsy?
Just a comment.
Certainly, Senator.
Senator Steele's comments. One of the issues there, we shouldn't get confused. The issue of the weight and more axles and all that is really more of an interstate issue than it is an interstate small truck issue.
and that's where it's going to play. The heavier weights are more on the...
Say it again.
The heavier weights and multiple axles are more of an interstate hauling than an interstate, with the exception, I suppose, of the lumber issues. And some of the trade-off is a fairness concern. A good example is like chip trucks,
mm-hmm.
I suppose log trucks, too. They have a heavy weight going one way, but not coming the other
mm-hmm.
when they're empty. So I think that's some of it's there. Some of the issues that are in there are power takeoff vehicles, whether those are cement mixers or garbage trucks, where they're using disproportionately on the diesel side, would be using a lot of fuel, but they're not adding wear and tear to the road system while they're powering the power takeoff units. So I think that's where some of the trade-offs, whether they're the right ones or not, is really a technical question, but I think that's some of the logic behind some of that is in there.
Mr. Chair, I think you as a group go through looking at whether the diesel tax unfairly or differently impacts classes of trucks that aren't necessarily impacted now. You also need to take a look at the new cost responsibility study and the shifts that that would have made anyway, whether or not we adopt the diesel tax. And that's something that I can't speak to in great detail, but it's something to keep in mind.
Thank you, Betsy. Let's see, we'll continue this public hearing as a subcommittee. And Charlie Hales, Bill Penhollow, and David Berenberg, please.
Looks like we're going to get cities first.
Yeah.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Charlie Hale on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities, and with Mr. David Berenberg, who's worked with you on this issue all session long. I'm very pleased to be with you here this morning. It's a beautiful day outside, and hard to remember in this windowless room. We enjoy those beautiful days for the obvious reasons, both because the winter's pounding of the pavement is over and because our asphalt plant is operating and our trucks rolled out 2.25 hours ago to start working on the 6,800 lane miles of city streets that we're responsible for maintaining. 500 lane miles of those streets are in a condition where if we don't resurface them this summer, they will deteriorate to the point that they have to be dug up and replaced at 5 times the cost. That situation faces every city and every county in the state. And, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm sorry to report that this summer, despite the number of good days in front of us, we will not resurface all 500 lane miles that need it because we don't have the money to do that work. We can't buy the asphalt, we can't hire the asphalt rakers, and we can't put diesel in the trucks to get them on those streets. So we will not do our job one more paving season. We will fall farther behind. That's why this bill in front of you is so important. The price of inaction on this issue is enormous. 25% of our city streets in our city and typically around the state are in poor or very poor condition, and this bill will give us a chance to start catching up to that deterioration that we have suffered over the last decade. Thanks to the work of many legislators and legislative staff and others here today, you have a bill to consider which will allow us to start catching up. It will raise about $20 million for cities annually when it's fully implemented, $20 million in new revenue. Currently, cities receive about $90 million from the state gas tax weight mile system. No doubt each of you have heard about the projects and needs that face the cities and counties in your district, but again, I wanted to illustrate with our 500 lane miles the seriousness of the problem that faces the 238 cities in the League of Oregon Cities. The amendment that the committee made on Wednesday that would repeal the weight mile system and replace it with a higher registration fee and a diesel tax is also supported by the League of Oregon Cities, as is SJR 44, which will put the question of cost responsibility before the voters and allow us to make that formal state policy, not just a folkway. The League supports both of those measures. The trucking industry long ago in this discussion asked cities what it would take to get our support for a change, and we told them that we needed cost responsibility and revenue neutrality. We have before us now, I think, a proposal that appears to meet those objectives. Are we worried? Is there a risk involved with this? Of course we are. Someone said once, though, that a ship in port is safe. But that's not what ships are for. This is a risk worth taking. We have got to take this risk if it allows us to finally move out of the stalemate and get on with the repair of that deterioration on our streets. It's a complex bill with many compromises. We want to thank all of you for the work that you have put into it and the bipartisan efforts now underway in this building to pass this bill. We also are committed to seeing the other ingredients of this package, high-speed rail, elderly and disabled transit funding statewide, included in the ultimate disposition of these issues by the legislature. Is this bill perfect? No. Each of us in this room has our own version of a perfect bill, but it is a workable bill that meets many of the state's needs. The perfect sometimes can be the enemy of the good, and this bill is good and should be supported, and we urge your favorable consideration of it. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have for me, either on behalf of the League or for me.
Thank you, Joe. David, do you have something you'd like to add?
Mr. Chair, just the packets that we handed out, I'd like to just quickly run you through about three or four pages just to paint the picture with pictures that Commissioner Hales just presented. Just on page 7, if you look at the package, just Oregon population growth from 87 to 97, we've had a growth of half a million people in the state. 90% of them, 91%, have lived in cities or moved into cities. The next page, on page 8, just for cities, our road system is growing at an incredible rate, 25%, almost 25% in 10 years. Because of our state land use policy, which is directing the growth in cities, we're gaining miles and miles of roads. And to make the cities work, we need to be able to have the ability to maintain and preserve those roads that we're gaining, not because we're going on a mad building spree, just to accommodate the people that are moving into our communities. And page 9, which just talks about the people that are here, not only do we have more people, but we're just driving a lot more. And, you know, every family, essentially, more vehicles, more miles. So we have our roads being filled more quickly. And then just on page 13, and then only one more page, and I'll stop talking. Pictures, which is that contracting out road work has gone up since 1991, 41%. And that's just putting out competitive bids to do the same job today versus in 1991, cost 41% more. That's not a cost that's under the control of government. That's a competitive bidding process. So not only are our systems being strained, but the cost of maintaining it is going up dramatically. And then last was just page 15, which just gives you a picture of what the revenue shortfall is, that cities raise over half of their transportation revenue locally from a variety of different local sources. So we do our part of raising the funds in our communities, but it's still the combination of existing dollars and our local dollars just don't get us to the point of maintaining our system. The end of the package, the last few pages, just have comments from cities around the state, everywhere from, you know, Caves Junction, Nyssa, Riddle, Bedell, saying what the problems are, just little snapshots of how it's faced by every community around the state, and also some information on, you know, what they would do with new dollars. And with that, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to chair before you today.
Thank you, David. Senator.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. David, you're sort of the city's expert on this and watch the transportation system. What's your sense about the proposed shift in funding from weight mile to combination vehicle and registration fee in terms of the ability to maintain cost responsibility?
I think I echo Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, the comments with Commissioner Hales, is that there is a proverb that Ronald Reagan once quoted, saying trust but verify. I mean, the position of the League has taken for years has been that our interest is in cost responsibility and ensuring that we are able to raise the appropriate shares of revenue from the particular car truck classes. And twice this year I've testified in opposition to the existing proposal to change weight mile or to go to a diesel tank. But what has changed and why the League's position has changed is that the idea of a constitutional amendment which would enshrine policy that the state's had since 1920, but isn't even in statute, just has been policy, would put it in the Constitution, And second, having a mechanism that I think is before you in the C-40 amendments that thank you for your hard work on, to try to have a mechanism to ensure that the constitutional provision, if passed, which we hope it would be implemented, and even if it wasn't passed, that there'd be a statutory mechanism that would assure that the appropriate amounts of revenue are raised. Nervous, and I see a lot of work for a lot of us over the interim in ensuring that transition is smooth and worked as it's supposed to, but we've been at an impasse on funding transportation, and that we need to move forward to try to address our transportation needs, and it seems that both we've covered the risk in the bill before you and if you adopt the amendments, and also that we break a logjam that has really kept us from maintaining our system. And so with that, I can answer a more specific question if you do.
Given the risks of moving from a known system to an unknown system and dependence on a constitutional change that's subject to voter approval, is it your opinion, or what is your opinion in terms of should any shift be made contingent on the passage of the constitutional amendment?
There's clearly a greater comfort level in having a constitutional amendment stand on its own merit. I think there's some concern over structure in the bill, which makes the package's implementation contingent on passage of a constitutional amendment, which poses the question to the public of not of the constitutional amendment, but also that a vote for it is a vote for tax increase. And so it sort of poses a two-part question, of which I think the substantive constitutional part will get lost to the tax question. Sure, I think that, if there was a question that was posed, do you switch systems based on passing a constitutional amendment from one to the other? Yeah, that gives much greater comfort.
Can I, Senator, give a political answer to that question as well as the substantive one that David gave you, and that is, First, there's a rising concern in the public about transportation issues generally. We get used to these being inside baseball issues here in this building, but this issue of the condition of the state's transportation system has really risen. When I first ran for office in 1992, the number one issue for the 508,000 people of the city of Portland was crime. Now it's transportation and traffic congestion, a cluster of issues around the functioning of the transportation system. That's the number one issue for people in our city. So people's consciousness about this has gone up. But they've never been asked the question about cost responsibility. I suspect all my instincts say, no matter, frankly, what interest group campaigns for or against that measure, that it will pass handily, because it's a responsible position, it's a policy that has made sense all these years, and I think it will make sense to Oregon voters when it's finally put to them. So I'm bullish about the prospect of that measure passing, regardless of how it's hooked or not hooked to other parts of this tax. It's a good policy. It has served us well. The diesel tax can be made to work as a implementing mechanism for that policy, just as Wait Mile implemented that policy. But I think the policy is fundamentally sound, and that Oregonians will verify that. So whether we link it or not, I think matters less to me than we put before them squarely as a clean proposition about, well, should we have cost responsibility as a plank in our state constitution, and I think they'll say yes by a wide margin.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Just to follow up on that, I think our voters would also be interested in knowing that Oregon is praised for its current system and how fair it is, and that we are touted around the country as having one of the best cost responsibility systems, especially among the truck users in our state. And so I think the question for voters is going to be making the case for why we should change a program that is so highly praised around this country, and that in fact the federal government is looking at implementing, because it is such a good progressive way of allocating cost responsibility. So I think that's an argument that's going to be out there when voters go to the ballot. And I have a concern that what has happened in this whole process with our transportation package is that people are willing to change a very good policy in exchange for getting an increase in the gas tax to help with all of our long lists of needs of transportation in our state. And I'm very, very concerned that we're willing to make some bad policy decisions on transportation in exchange for getting that flow of funds to that the cities and counties really need all around our state. So I know there's a lot of work to try and put together a package that people feel is going to be a responsible package, as, you know, changing from white mile to the diesel fuel. I'm just wondering, I'm very concerned about how that package is shaping up and whether we will end up with as good a policy in our state as we currently have as we do that. And I very much, I guess, for me, I'm very, very concerned on how people, I know because the needs are so great out there and we haven't been doing as good a job as we should be doing at meeting all of our transportation needs in our state, that people are willing to go down this route. And I understand that the word is out that unless we do this, we're not going to get a transportation package. And I think that is a very scary threat to cities and counties. And so I understand why people are going to have to get on board and support this, even though they know that our current system is a really good system. So anyway, I don't know that voters are going to say, oh, yeah, let's change. We need to, I think there's going to have to be a really strong case made for why we need to change something that is working so well and that is praised all around this country.
You started, maybe David would like to add. There are risks on both sides of this equation. The risk of failure to pass the package for the fourth session in a row is tremendous. And we will be back here next session asking you for a 10 to 12 cent gas tax increase just to correct the deterioration that has accelerated during the next biennium if we do nothing with that. That's what it will take.
I know.
Do you think it's possible for the Oregon legislature to contemplate a 10 to 12 cent gas tax increase? I don't think so. And therefore, again, the price of inaction is much greater than the risks of change that are tied up in this act. That's the fundamental proposition in front of it. And again, I guess the two things that really impel me on this, one is because we have this weird commission form of government in Portland and I have direct administrative responsibility for these bureaus, you know, you get pretty attached to whatever service you're responsible for. And I feel bad that we're not paving people's streets that need to be paved and that they're falling apart and that we're unable to do our job for the citizens who, again, are more and more concerned about this. But we're not able to deliver on a basic municipal responsibility because of the legislative standoff on this issue that has persisted so long. Secondly, we're in a boom time in our state, as David mentioned, and we're in a race with our own circumstances to see if we can provide the infrastructure and the amenities for those 90% of Oregonians in the new population that are living in cities, you know, whether it's parks or, yes, light rail systems or any other infrastructure need. We're in a race to be able to keep up with that growth, and we're not doing well in that race right now. And if we want this grand experiment of compact, orderly urban growth as opposed to suburban sprawl to work, we have to fund the infrastructure to make it work.
Yeah.
And to wait any longer to start that capital investment in addition to the maintenance needs, I think it's irresponsible. So it is irresponsible, in my opinion, to not take the risk.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond to this.
Sure, go ahead.
I understand what the needs are, and I am very seriously concerned about it because I know that our transportation system is very closely linked to the economy of our state, and I know we need to do something, absolutely, and I want us to do something about it. I guess for me it's just a frustration that, you know, many people were trying to keep the weight mile issue separate from any effort we were going to do to help cities and counties and meet our transportation needs around the state. Unfortunately, that effort was not successful, and here we are with it attached to the package, and I think it's unfortunate that that has happened. So, but I wholeheartedly agree with we absolutely have to do something for our cities and counties.
May I just direct a question to Charles, since you're on a roll talking political, and for me, and I think I heard Senator Castillo say that number one concern is the maintenance and repair and new roads. And there are special groups out there that are going to have initiatives in several different areas to fight a gas tax and maybe to fight a diesel weight mile tax. Would we be better off, in your opinion, to this session to do the gas tax increase only, period, and put off the conversion weight mile diesel for next session?
If it were possible to pass such a package, perhaps, but
pass it out of the legislature.
But I don't think it is. I think the package in front of you is the one that can pass. But then the question is it a responsible package? Can it be made to work? Are the risks offset by protections sufficient that good policymakers, whether they are legislators or administrators at ODOT, can make this system work? And my answer to that question, and I think the league's answer after David's analysis, is yes, this can be made to work, and that the different mechanisms of registration fee and diesel taxes can implement the policy of cost responsibility as well as the weight mile system has implemented. And that, again, the risks that something in that, that some glitch in that will trip us up are small enough that we think it's reasonable to go forward with this. And that there are, on this issue, a variety of interests. We've tried to accommodate as many of them as possible. You cannot make everyone happy in the legislative process, but I think we've accommodated everyone's stated interest, whether it's ODOT's stated interest in sufficient money to do maintenance, whether it's the legislature's stated interest in making sure there's capital there to build projects, whether it's the trucking industry's stated interest in maintaining cost responsibility but shifting to a different taxation system, or even AAA's stated interest in making sure that we do maintain cost responsibility. I think everyone's stated interest has been reflected in this package, and it deserves our support for that reason. Is it perfect? Would we, the league, like a different package if we got to write our own? Of course, and I think every one of those groups I mentioned would say the same, but this one isn't. There's enough common ground here that I think we can all stand.
Okay. David? Having quoted, thank you, Mr. Chair, Ronald Reagan, I'm going to quote the Rolling Stones, which said, you can't always get what you want, but to try sometimes you might get what you need. And I think that's sort of part of what's going to
be careful what you ask for. Bad for that.
The league, just to respond to Senator Castillo's earlier question on trust, is that I think the league has made a differentiation between policy and implementation. And in the discussion that we've had on the issue of weight mile and trucks taxation, and the position our membership had approved and continue to approve was on the principle, just saying that the principle of cost responsibility, the principle of revenue neutrality, the principle that we need to ensure that there isn't revenue loss, same one as neutrality, but we put it to the highway fund, and that whatever system, if there's a change in system, doesn't increase administrative costs and a few other caveats, but were the principles, and looked at the mechanism of collecting taxes sort of secondarily, just that can you preserve those principles and ensure that whatever system you have will meet them. And over the years in the session, I think the trucking industry has thought that the league has been a pain, a big pain, in how they wanted to proceed. And that's been true. I think the difference of what's happened in this bill, again, is the constitutional protection and the ratcheting mechanism so that it's not just something that the passing fancy adopted by one legislature, but can be enshrined as policy of the state and will protect it in that way. And also that working the numbers, which we were doing earlier this morning, just continuing working on the numbers, is that the projections coming from Legislative Revenue Office and people looking with a fairly critical eye and being critiqued by others get us there to those numbers, that they're numbers that we can have confidence in. I think as Commissioner Hale said, yes, there is a risk, but I think we've buffered the risk. And the trucking industry, I think, is unhappy with some of the assumptions made in that it produces, they think that they underestimate the revenues that will be produced. And frankly, I'm happy that that's the case. I think we should be erring on the side of conservatism in estimating numbers. And so I think we've come a long way in having, from the original bill 3344, which was presented in the House, that it's not the same bill that, or the same elements that are in the bill here today. They're much improved, providing assurances that we will raise the amount of money that we should from the trucking industry.
Thank you. Senator Byer, do you have any comments? Have you heard anything different from these people that has emerged from your work group?
No, just constant whining, but other
Any other comments? Thank you very much. Bill Pinhall, please, and then following Bill will be Ralph Gruner. And that's all of the people we have signed up for public testimony. If others wish to testify, we'll sign up.
Mr. Chair, I have a process question.
Certainly.
I was just wondering, at some point, are we going to walk through what this bill, the various parts of this bill? I feel like we really need to do that and go through the, you know, the details of it. I'm just wondering when we're going
to do it. Yes, we will, but I'm not prepared to do it.
Okay.
So having this,
okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhottle, representing the Association of Oregon Counties, and with me today to present our testimony is Judge Laura Pryor from Gillum County and Commissioner Bill Kennemer from Clackamas County. And the clerk is distributing our material to you at this point, and I'll turn the microphone then over to Judge Pryor.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Laura Pryor, and I have the pleasure of being the county judge from Gillum County, Oregon. And I've got to tell you, this testimony is one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in my life. You know, God delivers us from people of principle because it gets very difficult. I'm here to do some whining, Senator Byer. If you will look on the first page of the packet that we've handed out, is the counties of the state of Oregon listed by population. I use that all the time to try to frame the discussion that the counties need to have with this legislative body. Your problems and ours stem pretty much from this list. You have 36 counties, and they go from 1,566 people, which are as many as in some housing complexes in Portland, all the way up to over 500,000. Therein lies a difficulty for how you deal across this landmass with that kind of differences in population bases, as well as the differences in geography and everything that's attended upon there. So if you see me, you're going to see this list. My county, Gillum County, is the third smallest in the state. And so far, I've driven 13,000 miles since January on this transportation issue. Now, why in the world would I do that? There's got to be a reason that I would be willing to do that. And it's driven by need. The second page of our handout goes through kind of a snapshot of what has happened to the county system in this decade. In this building, when people refer to Oregon's road system, they tend to think that means ODOT system. The state system means ODOT system. When we use that term, we are referring to the system as a whole, ODOT, the cities, and the counties, the entire system. The counties have over 27,000 miles of that system. And all of that system isn't paved. There's 15,600 miles of that are paved. One of the reasons I'm here is because my county has 490 miles of road and 90 of it is paved. So when I'm here talking to you about the needs that we have, I'm not talking about paved roads. I'm talking about trying to get a civilization moving over a system that hasn't changed a tremendous amount. It works well, but we've got to be able to at least crush rock to keep it moving, whether school buses, getting grain to market, or getting the tourists in, which happens on a regular basis. On the east side of the county, of the state, there's been a tremendous change in how the road system is funded. Oregon's been blessed for a lot of years, probably most of this century, by having a lot of the system paid for by the timber receipts that come on off of the cut. That's declined. On the east side, we've had a 45 to 90% decline. And I want you to think about that, 45 to 90% decline in those revenues at the same time that we had Measure 5. So the general fund part of county budgets have been impacted by Measure 5, especially where you don't have growth to take up the slack, as well as declining timber revenues. 31 of the 36 counties have had to adjust, 31 of the 36 across the state have had to adjust to those declining revenues. Several of Oregon's counties, and you certainly know that as I do, traveling across the state, have been significantly impacted by increasing population congestion. When I come here, I travel over 200 miles one way, and I come from a small rural area to a state, a federal highway, Highway 84, I-84, and then I come to I-5 right in the middle of this congestion, and I turn south through that congestion. When I was in California in January, I was in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and San Diego on a trip, and it struck me that I wasn't seeing trucks on the freeways. I see a bread truck, but I wasn't seeing semis. And I was driving on 8-lane freeways, 4 lanes in each direction, and I called the California Highway Patrol Information Office, and I asked them, I thought this was so unusual in those cities, I wasn't seeing it. And they said, no, those trucks don't run on the freeway. They have truck routes. They also said, we asked them where I was from, and I said, I'm from Oregon. And they said, oh, yeah, well, Oregon is the interchange of the West Coast. That was said to me by an information officer in California's Highway Patrol office. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, take a look at the map. He says, you've got the east-west federal highway, and you've got the north-south highway. Well, if you stop and think about, if you think about that, the greatest congestion is occurring at the confluence of those two federal highways. So it's no wonder you have the fastest growing economy in the state right there, and then you've got those two federal highways right there. That's where it meets. It makes a tremendous amount of sense. If you think about it, this makes sense, but I mean, that's what's happening. The small eastern Oregon counties that I represent are having a tremendous time just keeping the doors open, trying to keep those doors open. Many of us have never had any timber revenues, and Measure 5 has hit us very hard. Half of Oregon's 36 counties have fewer road dollars today than we had in 1990. On top of that, 31 of our 36 counties have had $50 million damage, weather damage, in this decade. So what we have is a confluence of unhappy events within this decade that are exacerbating all of the problems that are facing us. After the 1997 session, the Oregon counties had a very in-depth discussion among ourselves about should we try this again or not. And we decided that we couldn't wait, and we had to come up with something that was so simple that it would be overwhelmingly reasonable. And we came up with what we called our ABCs. The A was alternative funding to try to help those counties on the east side that have lost tremendous timber revenues. And that is in your third page of the handout, the fourth page, is the Eastern Oregon State Forest Safety Net. If you'll go back and remember that population chart I started this discussion out with, the ABCs try to address the needs across those diverse counties from 2,000 people to 500,000 people. So the A is the alternative funding for those counties on the east side that have lost forest safety net money. The B is the basic funding for small counties in rural Oregon. Oregon, its wisdom, has always had a small counties and small cities bill and program, and now we have a small counties program as well that tries to address those counties that have the least to spend per road mile. How much money do you have to spend on your roads per road mile? As an example, on that page, Dillon County has $1,565 to spend on 147 miles of road. The C is probably one of the most complicated ongoing problems that this state is going to face over the next 20 years, and that is the issue of congestion. And I'm going to ask my compatriot, Commissioner Kennemer, to speak to that, who can do that far better than I.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Kennemer, County Commissioner, Oregon. And Laura has done a great job outlining a lot of our needs. One of our other needs is in the area of high growth. We have three counties in Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington County that in the last 20 years have experienced 50% of the population growth for the entire state. This is rapid growth, and with it, it brings the problems of trying to create road infrastructure. And we've had quite a problem addressing that. Also, it brings the fact that the reality to our awareness that our infrastructure is getting older, so our needs vary. For example, in Multnomah County, their current highest priority is that six bridges are in excess of 70 years of age. Mm-hmm. And that's where they would like to allocate an additional registration fee for high-growth counties of $10 per year to their bridge structures, because where did they come up with the money to do the seismic and retrofitting as well as the other upgrading that are necessary for these aging bridges? In Washington County, the needs are somewhat different. 600 of the county, 700 miles of road lie in rural areas outside the urban growth boundary. And that's because principally in the urban growth boundary, it's within their two cities, major cities. For the fourth consecutive year, the county is literally being forced to convert some of their failed county roads to gravel. And, you know, we might point out what happens with a lot of our county roads is they were never designed with urbanization in mind. I remember when I used to take my then-girlfriend and later wife on those nice little trips out Sunnyside Road. We were out in the country, and nobody ever thought those sort of out paths that were just wonderful trips out into the surrounding countryside were ever going to become urban connectors, arterials, major roads of transportation. Also in Washington County, Highway 26, Interstate 217, and I-5 all need attention if we're not going to soon be facing the worst traffic congestion in the state. And let me speak specifically about my county, Clackamas. 48% of our roads, and we have about 1,425 miles of county roads, are currently in fair to poor condition. 700 of these miles are in urban unincorporated areas where we have a problem with the formula, and where these roads, literally by virtue of priorities, we're not doing anything to maintain them. I like it, Commissioner Jordan, and what's happening with this deferred maintenance that we're doing throughout the state and especially in Clackamas County, that we're engaging in road rot. And it's what it is. And it's something that's insidious, and it's something also that I think maybe the public doesn't always realized just recently when I pulled a house and found that there was some dry rot in some of the stringers underneath it. Serious potential structural damage could occur if we allowed that to go on. Well, the same thing is true with road rot. If we don't do something about it, something very serious will happen. I guess the thing that I find is that in my county, there's no way under the current financing that I can even break even. Part of this is the inflationary impact that has occurred on the gas tax. The second piece Laura alluded to was the loss of timber receipts. And let me give you an example of that. In Clackamas County in 1985, we received $5 million worth of timber receipts. In this year, we will receive $3 million. $3 million 13 years later. And about the buying power of those two different amounts is very substantial. And that's part of the loss. And what this registration fee would bring to Clackamas County would be about $3 million a year. That compares to our entire budget of about 17. So it's a very sizable amount of money. It would go a long ways towards helping us get to where we need to go. Incidentally, this registration fee would be bring about $12 million to the greater metropolitan region. Let me hit just a couple of other things quickly, and I know your time's shortened here. Clackamas County has experienced about 75,000 new residents since 1980, or a 31% increase. Multnomah County has experienced an increase of 76,000 new residents since 1980, or a 13% increase. Washington County has experienced an increase of over 139,000 new residents, or a 56% increase since 1980. And Clackamas County, we're expecting a 50% increase in the next 15 years. A couple of other things is in the last couple of months, I visited with all but one small newspaper in Clackamas County, and they have all either done editorials or published positive op-ed pieces because they are recognizing clearly that that problem has got to be resolved. We also have the support of the chambers, the Clackamas County Transportation Association, our Economic Development Commission, and a number of individual business executives who've been down and I think made personal visits with some of you. I think we have a real high growth need. I think the bill is much needed and is, with all due fairness and no blame here, overdue. And I'm hoping somehow we can come together on 2082C and move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator?
Thank you. Commissioner, I'm curious, in Clackamas County, I guess it's in the high growth counties, the growth pressures and the need to expand the systems, because the expansion primarily on county road systems or on state highway systems that feed the need?
Well, you know, if you say is it primarily, that's a tough thing to answer. I think it's a little combination of both. For example, out in Beaver Creek in Oregon City area, served by State Highway 213, that's the major transportation corridor. On the other hand, all of the roads that run off of that are county roads. In fact, that's one of the things that we like about this high growth piece is actually it allows us to cooperate with ODOT, the cities, as well as the counties to try and find a regional solution. It's not simply an allocation of money to us as the county or to ODOT as the state or to a specific city. It requires us to work cooperatively, and I think it gives us a bigger bang for that buck. It's also going to be a lot of headbutt. Those are not easy determinations.
So I don't know whether counties have the authority like cities, but I'm curious, have the counties, particularly in high growth, considered systems development charges?
We have systems development charges.
For roads?
Current transportation systems development charge in Clackamas County is about $2,000 per resident. These are substantial charges.
Is that in addition to whatever city charges?
No, cities have a separate charge.
So it is in addition.
Most of the cities have a higher charge, actually, than the county. But we function as separate and independent governments in that regard. So the cities that provide their own building services have their own systems development charge separate and different from the county, and then the county has its own. The problem with that is it's regulated to account for less than one-third. The other problem with systems development charges is that they sort of come after the fact. You have that money when the development goes online. Well, the need is immediate. In point of fact, it takes planning to get to that and in a timeline to do construction.
Other questions?
Yeah, I do have a question for Judge Pryor. I was just wondering what your opinion is of having the weight mile issue as a part of this package. Do you have concerns about that? Are you okay with that? I just wanted to get your perspective on it.
The Association of Counties has historically opposed any change to weight mile. We have had long discussions about this issue in this session. I'm going to speak to your question, but I want to take a little side trip here. I think what put all of us in this position is basically truck deregulation. That has exacerbated the whole discussion. We now have so many more trucks on the road. Another thing that has happened is with the decline in rail moving the heaviest loads, you have no other way to move that. So we find ourselves in a situation because of some of those problems. I think a policy decision should be decoupled from the nuts and bolts implementing legislation. I think you've got two huge issues here, and they're all complicated. I understand the strategy, or I understand the discussion and the reasons for bringing those two questions together. In fact, they do affect each other. But I think there's a basic, and this is the county's position, is that there's a basic policy decision around cost responsibility. That is separate from the nuts and bolts of how you take care of the system, although they do affect each other. How the counties feel about having them together is not very good. We certainly would rather see that separated, and we also think that there needs to be a final determination, a constitutional amendment that deals with that policy issue of cost responsibility. Now, does this bill get us there? The counties are hopeful. If I could digress for a minute again, personally, I'm really worried about it. I have as I said, a very small community, and I know everyone, and everyone knows me, and I called a couple of our small trucking firms to ask them if they're running 80,000-pound trucks, how they're going to handle going to $4,800 or something change in registration, and I'm not sure that all the small companies do know about it. I'm worried about that. I'm worried about that for them. Having said that, I'd like to also say that almost every industry that's recognized in the state of Oregon has been before this legislative body at some point to make the case for some fee or license or reg that they felt was economically difficult for them to deal with.
Chair, I might add to that if I may.
Certainly.
Senator Castillo, we have adopted a number of basic principles that we have considered as we've looked at any funding package, and two of those to deal with this question. One is a fundamental principle that we've tried to apply here is to maintain cost responsibility and cost allocation based upon road use and road damage, making that connection, keeping that connection that exists today under cost responsibility. And secondly, is the same revenue flow that fair and proportionate sharing by all classes of vehicles. We've looked at the bill, as Jeff Pryor indicated, degree of nervousness, but as it has developed and under the guidance of Senator Janet and Senator Beyer, and advanced the concept of the constitutional amendment, SCR 44, that's in this committee, we see that as a vital piece, and as Jeff Pryor indicated, that's the policy issue that needs to be decided by the voters of Oregon. And then we need to maintain
revenue neutrality, which has been identified, though very tenuous, and we need to be able to see that sustained in the future. So special provisions have been drafted. I don't think there's a current version of the bill, but special provisions, I understand, are being drafted to have statutory adjustment provisions so that we don't see a loss of revenue. We don't have a problem with revenue neutrality on the bill. I just wanted to add those.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments? Thank you very much. Ralph Groener, please. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator. I'm kind of shy. Don't you have someone that could sit by me?
No, we're just trying to get rid of you as fast as we can.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions?
You would get me laughing just a moment. For the record, my name is Ralph Groener. Hopefully the folks can hear me. I represent AFSCME. I'm here speaking today in behalf of the labor unions affected by this particular measure, AFSCME, OPU, and all the building trades. We overwhelmingly and wholeheartedly support the measure in front of you, but I would like to take a different tack. I would hope in the future, as I've said to some of my friends in the legislature, that we would not only listen to the very outstanding job that you're hearing from city, county officials, but folks, as volunteer coordinator in my union statewide, I travel to counties, and I can tell you that our road crews, which are in nearly all of your areas, cities and counties, are saying something different to me than I hear in front of the legislature, so I have to speak from a union or a worker bee perspective. One, I'd like to say that I'm not sure that safety has been talked about enough in these debates, and I need to clarify something for everyone. The number one death in the United States that's work-related is not police, it's not fire. It, in fact, are our members who work on public roadways. That, by far, exceeds all other deaths, and we have had problems in the last 5 years in Oregon, and some of it due to very dangerous road conditions. So I thought I'd focus a little on what my members have told me and pick just a few areas. One, I'd like to put a word in for Tillamook County. That's one of our locals. But we almost closed Tillamook County, and their commissioners and folks don't say it like I do. This last year, I took the truckers with me, by the way, so they can corroborate that. And the fact of the matter is because of flood conditions that happened every year, not invariably, indubitably, every year, we haven't had the matching funds on the coast to get the FEMA dollars that we need necessary to fix. And so it's just a situation of geography, and we need to do something about that. I'd like to comment a bit about the quote I read in the Governing magazine, and I've been listening to this a bit, and I go, you know, how does labor look at all this? Of course, this is a jobs issue to us, and it's also an economic issue because it is jobs to our members. But it's also a top priority is jobs, economy, and safety. And then I look at this and I said, well, why don't I look at just one county where my members are responsible? So I took Multnomah County, if you don't mind. That's Local 88. And I said, why don't I just look at our bridges? Because the bridges in the city of Portland, which are maintained by Multnomah County, again, both are our members, but it's the county that maintains the bridges. I thought what I would do rather quickly is take a look at those. All of our bridges need earthquake retrofitting. We have not had the dollars, and I'm sure those of you who have lived in the area know that we have had just recently earthquakes in the area. The bridges were not built for traffic use that we have today. They were built many, many years ago. And the bridges are of statewide significance. If you're not from Portland Metro, the interstate traffic that takes place, if we have any one of our bridges closed down within the city, it will adversely affect are other bridges that are interstate. So I think that the key to us is that this is a risk, a significant risk in the trade-off of things, not to change to a system of abolishing weight mile. We are one of only five states continuing with weight mile, and quite frankly, you look at the cost, what was that, $27 million to administer that, makes me gag a bit. when those are $27 million that could have gone into uses of to help expand our highway system. So I took a quick look at our bridges and asked the actual people who do the work, not management, to talk about them for me. So this is coming from the worker bees who do this. Sobey Island, needs replacement, was built in 1950. Agricultural products to market are inefficient because of the weight restrictions. One of them also added, besides there's new beach access there, and I thought I'd tell you that, so some of the people feel that's important. The Broadway Bridge, built in 1913. Paint next preserves, they need paint. They haven't had the, they've had a federal grant offered them for $10 million, but they haven't had the $1 million for the matching funds. I'll do these rapidly. The Burnside Bridge, built in 1926. If you're at the Saturday market and you look up under the bridge at the Saturday market, you'll see chunks of concrete are literally falling off. That is our lifeline bridge in case of an extreme natural disaster. So that is a super important bridge to the region. The Morrison Bridge needs ramp on-off work. Without would require limiting freight movement into the central business district, so that's an economic concern. And we just completed the Hawthorne Bridge, built in 1910, and we spent $23 million to paint and provide extended service life to that bridge. But the bridge that's in the paper today that probably epitomizes my concern the most, interesting, since 1994, Metro, another one of our members, local, the staff and management of the Metro region decided last night not to do anything about the Selwood Bridge, built in 1925, needs replacement now, everyone agrees. You drive under the bridge by the boat marina on Highway 43 on the west side. You will see supports are visibly twisted from the landslide that occurred. And I was told 64% of the users are from Clackamas County, but then in today's Oregonian, it says Selwood Bridge use is 70% is by Clackamas County, although this bridge, and then they go on to say, the solution will not be a new bridge. They encourage job growth in Clackamas County. I thought I'd throw that out while the commissioner was here. That's how we're going to solve it, is build new businesses in Clackamas County to keep the folks at home. So the reason I raise those safety issues is that even though we're a union and supports, certainly our union supports the gas tax increase, it's been many, many years, and it's my opinion, and we all have a right to our own opinion, that as long as the wait miles there, we're not going to pass the gas tax. So if AAA is going to take this and Environmental Council to the polls, then I guess so be it, because labor will be on the side of making sure that Oregonians have a right to vote on safe highways, increased expansion of their roads, and making sure that we are safe when we drive on our highways and our bridges in Oregon. I can only say that our bridges in this state, I'm supposed to understate this, not to scare anyone. So I didn't say some of the things that I was really told statewide about bridges in your areas. And I won't, because then the press picks it up, et cetera. They can do their own homework. I've done mine. The fact of the matter is, folks, we've gone too far. And ever since 1990, when feds deregulated the world of politics, deregulated the trucking industry, we have not had a gas tax increase. And it's my opinion and labor's opinion that as long as we continue with deregulation and as long as we have the situation we have in Oregon, we will not have a gas tax passed, and that will further diminish the safety and our highway capacity and economic development in Oregon. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Ralph.
Can I follow up on that?
Oh, certainly.
You just made the statement that as long as we have wait mile, we won't get a gas tax package. Could you expand on that? What do you mean by that?
Politically, pardon me, Mr. Chair, Senator Castillo, it's my opinion and those I work with opinion that as long as Oregon has the wait mile and as long as the coalition, and is as large as it is, opposing wait mile, that my members and public members, citizenry will suffer, because we simply won't pass a gas tax in this session if we do not get abolished, do away with the wait mile. I've testified to that for about the last four sessions. That's my belief.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Thank you, Ralph. Anyone else wish to testify before the Subcommittee on Transportation?
Yes, sir.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lee Hazelwood. I'm classified as a senior advocate around the state of Oregon. I want to give you a little of my background, and I don't see anything in back of me that relates to something I'm going to say. At one time or other in the late 50s into the 70s, I was vice chairman, vice president of a interstate trucking company, home base in Detroit, Michigan. In Michigan, we were able to travel with 60-ton trucks. Pennsylvania, we were having 20-ton trucks. We had the high axle tax. We had the diesel tax. I got so sick and tired of spending majority of my time filling out these forms. But what I want to talk to you about is coming from a senior perspective. In the 60s and 70s, when I was making a pretty good salary, nothing bothered me. I was able to buy a new car every 2 years. Now when I'm retired, fixed income, my 86 Tempo has 123,000 miles on it and it's still running. Got here today. But I want to talk about the damage that trucks do versus cars. I see the millions of dollars was spent on the I-5 because studded tires. I don't recall those trucks doing that much damage. So I come perspective of trucking versus a senior advocate. Maybe it's time to let the people vote on the gas tax increase. Do we have the fortitude to do that? And I've also seen small farm trucks who are badly overloaded, even in my area, and I live in Staten, badly overloaded, and we talk about rural areas, and sometimes that damage is done by large or small farm trucks who are badly overloaded going to the cannery and things of that nature. So, very interesting when I see a report by the League of Oregon Cities, page 9, 1982 to 1997, miles traveled on urban minor arterials and collectors decreased by 55%, an increase of 4.4 million miles per day. A lot of those are traveled by SUV vehicles. That's bound to bring in more gasoline tax money. Personally, I think ODOT is doing a wonderful job with the money that they have, but I think the feds are also, due to Senator Wyden and Senator Smith, are putting more money into Oregon. But I think, and I have statistics to show the volunteer hours in the state of Oregon. It has nothing to do with churches, but this is Department of Human Resources statistics. In 1998, 9.5 million hours of volunteer hours. The gas tax has increased. Can we keep those volunteers working? Wife and I volunteered senior townhouse here in Salem. People do home-delivered meals around the state of Oregon. Majority time using their own cars, paying their own gas. And so can you continue to do that? I'm only raising these questions. Can they continue to do that? It's projected in 1999 there'd be 9.6 million hours of volunteer hours. So I'm just raising these questions about, I want to say again, when I was making a fairly good salary, it didn't bother me when I paid a larger gas tax increase. But I want you to think of the smaller individuals, the people who are out there with fixed income, who might be saddled with it. Happy to answer any questions?
Yeah. Questions? Thank you very much, Lee. Anyone else wish to testify? Seeing none, hearing none, we will be.
Thank you, Environmental Council.
There'll be further opportunity.
And we're
meeting tomorrow also. And so we will be in recess until 3 p.m. in this room. We are adjourned.
Thank you.